The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, Tov. I knew you'd like that quote, Howard. That's exactly the kind of thing that goes down with you very well, and I guess the listeners as well. But I think, in order to understand quotes like that, we kind of need to see it with a little bit of hindsight, right? At the moment, I'm not sure that we see it in quite that way.
We're not there yet. And of course, the pall of Yom HaShoah also brings a very different perspective and mood to that kind of report.
Absolutely. I mean, we can start by talking a little bit about Yom HaShoah. There will be the annual siren take place in just over an hour from now, 10 o'clock Israeli time, 2 minute siren. It's usual for people to stop whatever they're doing. And there are numerous videos that are published around which show traffic in Israel coming to a complete halt on the roads, people just stopping in their tracks as they're walking along the outside and just bowing their heads in remembrance of the 6 million. This year, people will be at home in the most part. So we won't quite see the stop that is common around the streets of Israel, because in fact the streets are pretty quiet as it is. But this year it's interesting that the theme of Yom HaShoah is all about the Jews who have been involved in bringing solidarity, in helping people during the course of the Shoah. And the remembrance ceremony that was broadcast on TV last night from the Warsaw Ghetto Plaza of Yad Vashem, without any audience participation. It was just simply an empty plaza with people, a few people singing, and of course the usual announcements that were made, and messages brought from the president and from the prime minister from the safety of their own homes, so people not in physical attendance. And even those people who were chosen to light the 6 beacons, survivors of the Shoah who were chosen, were not physically present. Their stories were told. They lit the beacons remotely, in a sense, because they were not physically present at the ceremony, but they attempted to try to somehow replicate the traditional ceremony that is usually held in that location, which is the Warsaw Ghetto Plaza. And stories about people who were involved in bringing Jewish unity, in helping in solidarity, Jewish solidarity, to try once again to emphasize this whole idea that it wasn't simply about being victims, but there was a great deal of heroism and a great deal of bravery shown by people. And that kind of ties in with the little teaser that I left you with yesterday about why we choose today as Yom HaShoah,
yes,
rather than any other day of the year. We know that the international community, the United Nations, have chosen a date in January, which commemorates the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp as being the International Holocaust Memorial Day. But we've chosen today, and it kind of ties in with the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which actually took place on Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan. So not quite today. But obviously that date would have been very, very inconvenient as a day to mark the remembrance of the Shoah, because of people's usual preparation for Pesach. And so this date has been chosen, which kind of almost ties into the period of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. It's very fitting that the ceremony takes place in the Warsaw Ghetto Plaza of Yad Vashem. And on the first occasion that this date was actually commemorated, back in 1951, it was Mordechai Anilevich who was the person who was brought out. A statue of him was unveiled. He, of course, was the leader of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And so I think it was very pertinent and very fitting that he was the person who was brought as being the hero of that particular occasion. And that's the reason why we choose today, which is really all about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. It shows the movement, it shows the resistance shown by Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto in those times, and that's what we want to remember, rather than the negative things that happened during that period.
Interesting, that really, really fascinating. So The other bit of news is that Israel actually has a government.
Well, I was going to talk yesterday about the fact that we don't have a government and that a date has already tentatively been set for a fourth election. And you, I think, with perhaps some foresight, overruled that discussion. And I absolutely respected that because we're kind of bored of talking about it. But we actually do today
absolutely
have a government.
No, today we're prepared to talk about it. Oh, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Today we're prepared.
Even in the news.
Yeah, exactly.
So we do have a government. That's about the only good thing that I can say about this, to be honest with you. I mean, after 17 months of trying to form a government, finally we do have one. It's been labeled as an emergency unity government. Okay, emergency, I think, is right. We're in an emergency situation because we haven't had a government for 17 months. I'm not sure about the unity bit because really the government has really started out by not agreeing with each other. And what we're seeing is a government which is so bloated that I think it's the most bloated government in Israel's history. 36 ministers, I think, and another 16 deputy ministers, which just costs the taxpayers endless amounts of money and is really unnecessary and is just a sign of the lack of unity because everybody has to have a job somewhere. But the kind of headlines is that Prime Minister Netanyahu will remain Prime Minister officially now as opposed to caretaker Prime Minister between now and next year in October, 18 months after which Benny Gantz will take over as Prime Minister. Until then, Benny Gantz will serve as Minister of Defense.
Yeah, but I mean, is that realistic? I mean, does anybody actually think that's ever going to happen?
Well, the last time that Israel entered into such an arrangement, the second round never took place. The government fell before the second Prime Minister could take office. And I don't know what people think right now, to be honest, because it's so hard to see 18 months ahead when we're kind of fighting day to day with the things that are really affecting us. And, you know, we're in a battle right now, a daily battle, just to keep things at bay and to get the Israeli economy back on track again. So I'm not sure that people really foresee whether Benny Gantz might take over or not. But there is the hope that as Minister of Defense and as Vice Prime Minister, as they like to term this, I hate that term, Vice Prime Minister, I prefer Deputy Prime Minister, but whatever it is, it's officially being called Vice Prime Minister. In his position, he might be able to influence the way that things are going. But I think, I mean, the one thing that the government's already agreed is that the only thing that they're going to deal with over the next 6 months is coronavirus. Nothing else is on the agenda, perhaps except for this possibility of annexing parts of the Jordan Valley, or parts of the West Bank as envisaged by the Trump plan. But no other policy issues are really being allowed to be brought to the government in the next 6 months except for the coronavirus. So that's already seemed like we've got a government that is sitting out with one foot tied behind its back and one hand, one arm tied behind its back without any real teeth, without any ability to do anything except deal with the corona issue. And I think that there's so many other things that really need to be dealt with policy-wise. So it is also interesting that the Yamina party of Naftali Bennett is not officially currently included in this coalition agreement. And in fact, they've already put out a statement yesterday saying that Prime Minister Netanyahu has effectively shown them the door. That's the way that they've been put it. But there are rumors that the Prime Minister is intending to include Naftali Bennett in the coalition agreement and potentially issue them some ministries as well from the ministries that have been allocated to the Likud. Of course, the ultra-Orthodox parties are part of the coalition as well. Their status effectively remains the same. They will get the same ministries as they have today, and so that remains unchanged for them. So we have a government, and that's a really good thing. It's a really important thing. The rest, unfortunately, is subject to interpretation and to evaluation, because I think that, you know, even though we do have a government, this is really a government that starts out without much enthusiasm and without much power.
And
really,
it seems,
as far
it feels,
as I can think.
I don't know, maybe it's just me, it feels like a bit of an anticlimax.
A huge, not a bit, it's a huge anticlimax, because,
okay, so it's not just
you know, this could have been achieved a year ago or more. You know,
true.
The same deal could have been struck without having to go to three elections, without having to have gone through what we've gone through in terms of all the political machinations of you know, arguing and all the things that have gone on between then and now. This really could have been done then. There's nothing in this agreement that could not have been struck back then. But, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes you have to go through things in order to realize that what was on offer then was actually the best offer. And so no formal declarations, no victory speeches at all, because we wound straight into Yom HaShoah last night, and so there wasn't really much space for people to make public announcements and public statements. Prime Minister Netanyahu did use the opportunity to say, you know, that he promised that he would bring an emergency government to the people of Israel, and he's achieved that. What also has been included in this coalition agreement is that if before the government actually can take office, the Supreme Court rules that the Prime Minister is not entitled to act as Prime Minister any longer, which is obviously something that was contemplated by the agreement and is as a concern of the Prime Minister, that the country will go back to elections again. And if once the government has already begun its operations, the Supreme Court rules for any reason that Prime Minister Netanyahu cannot continue in his role as Prime Minister, then Benny Gantz will simply take over at that point. And to me, that seems more likely than waiting 18 months and seeing a natural transition to Benny Gantz as Prime Minister. So we will see. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next 18 months and whether Benny Gantz actually will take office as Prime Minister.
Absolutely fascinating. All right, we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to talk to you about COVID-19 in Israel, because Israel is being recognized as handling it particularly well.
Well, certainly there has been this study published in Forbes magazine, which presents quite a comprehensive analysis, which checks the steps that have been taken in various countries to prepare and to fight against the coronavirus, and also has looked at what the government has done to offer financial assistance to people who've been affected. Israel hasn't really been rated very well in terms of government financial support, but on all other things, Israel has been rated particularly highly, such that Israel comes out actually on top of this list of all the countries in terms of the effectiveness in the fight against the coronavirus. So that, of course, has been used by the government to say we're doing a good job, and this is recognized by Forbes magazine, which is obviously a very, very respected publication. In second place is actually Germany, interesting enough, followed by South Korea, Australia, and out of all the countries in the world, the country that takes fifth place is China, which I think is also a fascinating statement. The countries that are ranked as being the worst on the list is Italy, and then followed by the US, UK, Spain, and France. Those are the worst countries in terms of their effectiveness in the fight against the coronavirus. And what's happening in Israel is that we're seeing now more people who are recovering from the virus than those who are actually being afflicted by it. And I think that that's a very, very positive moment, where we're actually seeing a net decrease in the number of people who are suffering from the coronavirus. And we're also seeing, you know, quite a substantial reduction in the number of people dying and the number of people who are in serious condition and being intubated. So very, very positive movement in terms of the numbers. And of course, we're waiting to see what the effect of the back to work decision will be in terms of what it does for the coronavirus, and the people are hoping that this will not affect the overall recovery that we're seeing against coronavirus.
Absolutely, yeah, unbelievable. And we'll, of course, the story is one that we are going to be speaking about for some time to come. Unfortunately, it's just after 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at the same time.